And yeah, we'll do the learning. Le'ilui Nishmat, Bechor Yosef ben Shmuel. Okay, so we're in the middle of Gideon's story, and what a story this has been. This has really been something incredible. He starts out apparently an idolater, apparently born into a family of idolaters. His father, Yoash, is the head of the local Avodah Zarah. This is one of the several parallels we have noted between Gideon and Abraham. Gideon is hard at work threshing the grain in the wine press in the wine cellar to avoid the raids by Midian. And then a malach appears to him. We talked about the malach's appearance. We talked about the malach sitting, about where it came from, and all of that. We're not going to go through all of that again. Gideon does not know it is a malach. At first, at any rate, the malach addresses him and says, "God's here to save you." And he says, "Where have you been?" And he says, "Don't worry. Use your strength and use your fire to fight on behalf of Israel." And that's the charge that he gives him. And his job specifically is going to be to destroy his father's Mizbeach, to destroy the Asherah, to take the two animals which have been apparently held and dedicated, and one of them he is supposed to bring as a sacrifice to God on the new altar that he's going to build, which is going to use the wood from the Asherah. We talked all about that already. We're not going to reopen that. But Gideon asks for a sign. He brings him a gift, and the malach does zap, and the karbon, or not karbon, but the gift, goes up in smoke, except for the soup. And and that's how Gideon understands that this actually is a malach. Gideon carries out his mission. People find out about what he did. Not so surprising when, you know, he had 10 people assist him. You know, he's just, you know, asking for a promotion there. And the people are very angry and they want to kill him. However, Yoash says, don't kill him. Yoash says, if Baal is for real, if Baal is actually a god, then he can take care of himself. He's a big boy. He doesn't need you in order to protect him. And that's how Gideon survives. And the people have listened. The people listened to Yoash. He was, after all, the chief idolater. And that's how Gideon survives. And at the end, we did a little bit of a digest of some of the summaries between, a little bit of a digest of the relationship between Gideon and Abraham. But that's, in a nutshell, you know, where we've been, skipping all the bells and whistles. So what we now hit is Gideon's second encounter. Each time he is called upon to do something that is above and beyond, he is going to get some reinforcement from God before he does it. So we are in Perek Vav, chapter 6, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, sentence 33. V'chol Midyan v'amalek v'nei kedem nesfu yachdav v'yavru v'yachanu be'emek Yisrael. Midian, Amalek, and the nations of the east gathered together, and they camp in Emek Yisrael. Emek Yisrael is an area in the center of Israel. It is, according to the Dan Mikra's map, just south of the Kinneret in terms of its latitude. But it's not located under the Kinneret. It's actually centered within the country. We talked a little bit about Emek Yisrael, I think, when we located where the fight between Devorah and, well, not Devorah, but in Barak and Sisera was. So the Midianites come from the east, along with Amalek, who was a desert dweller, along with other eastern populations, and they camp in Emek Yisrael. And what we're going to do is we're going to read this section all together, like Psukim Lamed Gimel to Mem, and then we'll ask our questions about it and get an understanding of what's going on. Veruach Hashem lavsha et Gideon. The Spirit of God clothed Gideon, which is a phrase that you find in various places for prophecy. I gave you actually on the sheet two other references in Divrei Hayamim to such a phrase where that shows up elsewhere. But the Spirit of God clothes Gideon. Vayiska b'shofar, he blows his shofar. Vayizaik Aviezer acharav, and Aviezer, which is a family of Menashe, follows him. Remember, he is from Menashe. Umalachim shalach b'chol Menashe, and he sends messengers throughout Menashe. Vayizaik gamhu acharav, and he also was drawn after that. Umalachim shalach be'asher uvizvulun uvenaftali vayalu likrasam. And not only that, he sends to Asher, Zvulun, and Naphtali, and they ascend together to meet the invaders. Just think about this. Asher, Zvulun, Naphtali. Do you remember where they are geographically?
Zvulun and Naphtali, are they to the west?
They are, Asher and Naphtali are the two northernmost tribes in the land west of the Yarden. And Zvulun is with them, basically. So yes, they're all north, and they will cover the full range to the coast, but from the Kinneret to the coast. But Asher, Naphtali, Zvulun are the northern tribes, as opposed to Yehuda, Shimon, who are in the deep south. And then above Yehuda, you have Binyamin, and then you have Ephraim and Menasheh. Right, Zvulun, Asher, Naphtali are all in the north, and Dan has its own thing going, where they're to the west and south, but then they end up being to the north later on in the Sefer. That will be discussed. So he summons Menasheh, that's his group, and he gets all of Menasheh to follow him. Vayizaik gam hu acharav, Menasheh follows him, and he also rallies Zvulun, Naphtali, and Asher, and they follow him as well. This is actually really good when you think about it. Because you'll recall Devorah's great frustration that she expresses in Shirat Devorah about which tribes supported and which tribes did not support. Her major push was, hey, you guys didn't rally to come with us. He is succeeding. Vayomer Gidon el Elokim. But Gidon says to God, Im yesh hamoshia biyadiyas Yisrael kasher dibarta, if you are really going to help me to save Israel like you said, here's the challenge. I'm going to put out a piece of wool in the Gorin, in the granary. Notice I mentioned last week, now it's a granary. It wasn't really a granary, it was a wine press. But I guess because he's using it for grain, now we're just going to call it granary for shorthand. Fine. If there will be dew on this this piece of wool in the morning, and all the land will be dry, then I'm going to know that you are going to save Israel like you said. That's his demand. So he calls his shot, right? This is what I want. And so it happened. He gets up early in the morning. And he squeezes out the wool. You know how much water he got out of that? This is dew. A trough full of water comes out of the wool. Gidon says to God, excuse me. Don't get angry. I just want to speak a little further. And that's one of the Avraham associations. That phrase, v'adabra achapam, is a phrase that Avraham uses when he's pleading on behalf of Sodom. I want to try again with this wool. He asks for a reversal. He says, this time I want the wool to be dry and all the ground to be wet. Right? And by the way, I'd like a martini. Right? I mean, it's like, Gidon has no, I don't know, he's just like, sure. And God does it that night. And the wool is dry, and there's dew on the ground, all over the ground. So Gidon asks, and Gidon gets. Really fascinating. Okay, what questions do we have here on this section? What should be bothering us here?
Well, the very first, he had Ruach HaKodesh. So if he already had Ruach HaKodesh, why would he want tests? And if God spoke to you, chutzpah to now say, let's have a test.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's asking for a test, not to mention he already got, the miracle earlier. Not to mention, not one, I'd like two, please. Right? Not that way, even though it's exactly what he requested. It's not even like, if you think of like Choni, right? So Choni HaMa'agel asks God for rain. And he's upset because it isn't the kind of rain that he wanted. But there, it wasn't the rain that he wanted. Here it is the rain you wanted. You asked, you got, and now you're coming back again. So the whole thing is odd. And what exactly was this Ruach HaKodesh that he got anyway? When it said, back in Pasuk Lamed Dalet, Ruach Hashem Lavshah Et Gidon, I don't know what that means. It didn't say what it did. It just said that the Spirit of God clothed him. I don't actually know what that phrase means. So that's another problem. How about we go back a sentence? Why did Midian, Amalek, and Bnei Kedem decide to invade? What was this?
Just a annual raiding party?
Yeah, that could be. It's entirely possible. Remember, that's how we began the story. We said the Jews are living under the thumb of these eastern tribes who, whenever they decide it's time, come on over and get grain. So that may well be. We're going to see a problem with that. But that would have been my gut, would be to assume that that's exactly what happened, and that's what Gideon wants to take advantage of. In other words, they came over thinking they're getting grain, and in fact, Gideon is going to fight them. Maybe. It's also really odd. Look at the order of things. What's strange about the order in which Gideon does this?
He gathers all the men and then he asks for the stuff.
Yeah. Isn't that backwards? Right? The way it's supposed to work, let me explain, is first you get God to convince you this is a good idea. Then you rally the army. Because what happens if you don't get your sign now? Sorry guys, false alarm. Everybody go home. The order of things is bizarre. So let's go back for a second here. First of all, to this invasion. What exactly the invasion is. I would have assumed, and Malbim says, it's the time of the barley harvest and they come to take the barley. Right? That would have been, I think, a fairly safe assumption. And in fact, Malbim is going to say that in Perek Zion. However, if you take a look at Perek Zion Pasuk Yudalet, chapter 7, sentence 14. This story is later on. We're not going to get to this story today. But Gideon, the night before the war with Midian, is going to be privy to a dream that the border patrol of the Midianite camp have. The guards of the Midianite camp, somebody evidently was sleeping on the watch, and he had a dream, and Gideon finds out about the dream. Why the dream is so important, we'll have to talk about, God willing, when we get there. However, the key is that the fellow who is dreaming sees a barley cake of some kind, and look at what he says to his fellow. Vayan re'ehu vayomer, ein zos bilti in cherev Gideon ben Yoash ish Yisrael. You know what this is? This is the sword of Gideon ben Yoash, the Israelite. In other words, Midian knows about him. This was not a routine raid where they just came across the Yarden and said, we're taking food. It's entirely possible that what's going on is that Gideon destroys the altar. And it's not just any altar. It's the lead altar in the area. His father Yoash is the head idolater. Word gets back to Midian that Jews might be trying some kind of insurrection. You know, Avodah Zarah, if you think about the Rambam's formulation of Avodah Zarah, right? The Rambam understands that idolatry began as a tool for social control. It was something that was used in order to get people to follow a leader. So the leader said, if you will do what I instruct you to do, then we'll have rain and we'll have crops and all of that. It's possible that Midian is using the Avodah Zarah that they have brought in. I'm guessing that they brought it in. I can't prove that. But they're using that as a barometer of their relationship with the Jews. As long as the Jews are worshiping these foreign gods, we're safe. The Jews start breaking the idols, now we have a problem. So I think, based on the fact that in Perek Zion, they're very aware of Gideon as a warrior, I think it's possible that this was actually an attack. That's what's going on.
There was a period of time in between when he destroyed the Mizbeach.
It must be. Yeah, sometime a scout has to get word to them. And I mean, it's not that big an area, but still, they're rallying forces. Something has to pass. And there is, in any case, because the truth is, we read about him doing this. Right? We also read about him rallying people. So there is some length of time here. I don't know how much. But now let's talk about the Spirit of God that is clothing Gideon. This phrase appears here, and then two other times in Tanakh, as I referenced in source number one. Both of them are in Divrei Hayamim. Each time, it inspires a communication. The one that's in Divrei Hayamim Aleph is the one that's probably most familiar because it actually is used in liturgy. Amasai greets David, and he greets him in peace on behalf of warriors who are with him. And it's going to be part of a rally that David is going to do. David is going to rally the people for war. How does the pasuk of Baruch Hashem Lavshad Amasai Rosh Ha? Where's this from? What liturgy is this in? It's in. Is it in Kiddush Levana? Blank looks. In any case, I think it's in Kiddush Levana. But that's one usage. And then the other usage is when Zechariah the Kohen Gadol, not Zechariah the Navi, Zechariah the Kohen Gadol is rebuking the nation. That's not a war scenario. But each time Lavsha, the clothing of a person in the Spirit of God, is going to inspire some kind of communication. And here, what it means is Hashem is inspiring him to rally them for war. Now remember what we've said about Ruach HaKodesh. What does the Rambam say Ruach HaKodesh is? We talked about this in chapter 3. We used it when one of the Shoftim had Ruach Hashem. Ruach Hashem, we said, is the low Ruach HaKodesh is the lowest level of nevuah, of prophecy, in which Hashem strengthens a person to do that which they would have done anyway, meaning it's in their nature already, but to do it better, to do it stronger, to do it with greater force, maybe to do it even though they're afraid. So that can be a spiritual experience or physical experience. Ruach HaKodesh can augment a person so that they will perceive something they otherwise would not have perceived. And we use that term, Ruach HaKodesh, when we talk about, you know, somebody having some great insight. But it can also be to energize a person to act in a way that they would have anyway. God isn't changing the person's identity or the person's mind. The Rambam says, this is what I mentioned the last time we discussed this, the Rambam says that Moshe at the well, when he fights on behalf of the daughters of Yisro, that's Ruach HaKodesh. He says, Moshe on his own would not have done that. Moshe's a fugitive. He has to lay low. Right? The very first thing he does after he runs away from Egypt is to get into a fight at a local bar. That's not a good strategy. But Moshe already has it in him to fight on behalf of the underdog, the person who is the victim. And Hashem just gives him a little push, and he does it. So Gideon here is being moved to something that's already in character. He wants to save the nation. But Hashem is just pushing him a little bit, and maybe that's why he does it even before the nes, even before he has the sign. Because it's God pushing him to do it. You follow?
Yeah.
That's what I think I see in this Baruch Lav Shah. Yeah.
So why is he second guessing
good
the relationship with Hashem and sort of testing him? Like, is he losing it?
Like, so that's where we have to go.
Are you real? Like, what's going on?
Right. So hang in there for a little bit and you'll see. But that's exactly the question. But not only does Gideon go, Aviezer, his family, right, from Menashe, agrees to go, possibly because they're so impressed that he survived destroying the idol. So he's got some street cred. And he sends for these northern Shvatim, these northern tribes as well. And the idea here, according to the Da Mikra edition on Shoftim, I'm looking to see because I don't remember it, Professor Elitzur is the editor. He says the idea is to unite these northern tribes in the western part of Emek Yisrael. That's one possibility. Or, alternatively, it's actually to be able to attack Midian from two sides. You know, you've got Menashe flanking on the east, and then you've got these other tribes on the in the west. Okay. So, Gideon then makes a request here. It's very interesting. Take a look at Pasuk Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, the end of Lamed Vav, really. Yeah.
Which Shvatim were closer to Emek Yisrael?
I mean, these are the ones.
These are the closest.
Yeah. The Da'at Mikra edition actually has a map. You can see it. Menashe is below Emek Yisrael, and then above it he's got Zebulun and Asher and Naphtali. You see that?
Yeah.
Asher and Naphtali being the top two, and then Zebulun being just below them. So there's your...
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, that's for sure. He's going to have an issue, Gidon, because there is a tribe he has left out, and they're going to be angry about it. But we're not there yet. So, look at Pasuk Lamed Vav. There are two words there that stand out. He says, Im yeshcha moshia biyadias Yisrael, if you are going to help me to defeat the enemy, to save Israel, kasher dibarta, like you said. It's that same edge that Gideon had when we first met him, when he said, God, where have you been? So he says, if what you're saying to me is really true, that you're going to help me, then dot, dot, dot. What is it that Gideon is so skeptical about? Why does he need, as he said, why does he need a second miracle? So we already read Abarbanel on the first sign, but Rav Sanja Gaon, what he says here, is really, 500 years before Abarbanel would say it. Take a look. He says, Habachina al shnei panim. He says there are two kinds of tests. We say you're not allowed to test God. He says there are two kinds of tests. Echad mehem yecholas haborei hayuchal al davarim lo. One is to test divine abilities. Can you do this, God? Vizeo haasur. When the Torah says don't test God, that's what it's talking about. Vahasheni, the second kind, bechinas haadam inyano etzel haborei, is testing our own position relative to the Creator. It's not, can God do it? But is God going to do this for me? Hayesh lo etzlo mala yisera imlo. Do I have some kind of special standing in God's eyes or not? Acharshu modeh shu yachol al maaseahu, already acknowledging, I know God can do it. Vizeh mutar, and that's allowed. Kasher amar b'Gideon, as it said regarding Gideon. And this, to me, is the critical point of the entire story. I said when we started Gideon, this is a key passage for all of Tanakh in terms of explaining what miracles are good for and what miracles are not good for. And it's the response to people who say, if only you would just, show me a sign, God, I would believe and I'd be good and I'd whatever. Gideon is the demonstration that that's not true. Because the problem is not a lack of belief that God can. The problem is a lack of belief that God will. Gideon has already had his miracle, and in fact, he did what God told him to do, and God took care of him. He was okay after, destroying the idol. Through his father, through God, he's okay now. But now he has to go do a second thing. He has to rally for war. And not only does he have to rally for war, but you're going to see, he's going to have to do it with a very, very small army, despite everybody he has just rallied. So, there's a lot of nervousness here. Think of Yaakov, Katonti Nikola Chasadim, right? Maybe I've already burned all of my credit with God. So he says, I'd like proof that you're still with me. And when you think about it, that makes perfect sense. Because what did he ask God to do? It's not as though proving that you can play water games with wool demonstrates that you can beat the Midianites. If he wanted God to demonstrate he could beat Midian, he would have said, uproot a mountain, or produce thunder and lightning and hail, right? Some kind of tour de force. That's not what he does. He's not looking for signs of divine strength. He's looking for signs that God is with him. You follow?
Yes. Is this the equivalent of asking the Urim and Thummim what's going to happen or what to do?
Well, it's the equivalent of asking the Urim and Thummim, should I go to war? Because should I go to war usually is understood to mean, and will you help me? Although we'll see in the story of Pelegish Begiva that doesn't work out. But normally that's the way it works. But that's what Gideon is asking for here. Not a sign of strength, but a sign of relationship. But that leads, of course, to the next question, which is, so what's the message in the wool and the water? how does the wool and the water demonstrate relationship? Like, why that? If you're just asking for God to do stuff, I mean, you know, levitate this pencil, please, and that will show that you're with me. Like, why wool and water? What's the image here?
So does this mean the Ruach HaKodesh wasn't good enough?
Yes. Well, the Ruach HaKodesh wasn't really proving anything. The Ruach HaKodesh is God co-opting Gidon, right? And getting Gidon to rally the army. So why should that be good enough? Like, God, great, now you have me rally the army. Now what? Just the opposite. Now I'm more worried.
He's just trying to rationalize, well, how do I know it wasn't a force of nature, that the wind blew a certain way and created condensation or whatever. So he's just proving to himself that it's truly Hashem's hands that caused these things to be.
But why this way? Why not ask for something? I mean, anything he asked for, you could always ask, well, why not something else? But Abarbanel says there actually is a message in this specific request and in the reversal. Take a look at source number 3. Abarbanel writes, "Ani asim gizas hatzemer shu dugmasi v'dimyon atzmi v'miyuta v'refuna b'goren esher ba'ali ba'han v'vah barishona." He said, I'm going to take a piece of wool. The wool's a lot like me. It's small, it's weak, and I'm going to do it in the place where you came to me the first time, he says. And if there will be dew on it, and everything else will be dry, that will be a sign that divine influence is coming to me, because we always compare Hashem's influence to water. Right? Ya'arof kamatar lekhi. May my message rain down like water. So what he's saying is, I want to know that there will be wool, there will be divine influence on me and not anybody else. So the piece of wool is going to get the water and nothing else is going to get the water. That's the message. It's all about the relationship. And lo and behold, that's what happens. Except, Gidon then says, now I want the opposite. So why does he want the opposite? So the Gemara gives you an explanation which Tosfos picks up on. Take a look at source number 4. Betal uvaruchos lochivu chachamim lahazgir v'imba lahazgir mazgir. You know that we daven for rain, right? We don't. Anyone daven nesach svar here?
Yes.
Okay.
So we do.
We don't daven for dew. If you don't like it, look at the Gemara. The Gemara says the Chachamim did not require you to say Morid Hatal. The Chachamim did not require you to say anything about wind. However, if it makes you feel better, you can say Morid Hatal. That's what the Gemara says. My time, huh? Why? Rabbi Chanina lafisha ein neetzarin. Rabbi Chanina says because they're always there. They never halt. That's the Gemara there. There's more to see in the Gemara naturally, but Tosfos comments on that in relation to our miracle, and specifically, take a fast look back in the Pesukim before you see it. Before you see Tosfos in Pasuk Lamed Chet, right in sentence 38, when he asked for it the first time and it happened, right? How does it? What does it say happened? Vayichen. Now look at Pasuk Mem, when his second request comes true. What does it say? Vayas Elokim, Cain. God did it. So that's what Tosos here picks up on in source number 5. Kishamro, al kol ha'aretz yet tal, when he said, I want dew everywhere on the land, meaning the second time, the second miracle, Ksiv Vayas Elokim Cain. It said God did it. Ushamar Tal Yehiel HaGizal Vada. And when he said, I just want dew to be on the piece of wall, Vakaretz Yechorv, and everywhere else will be dry, Ksiv Vayichain. It says, and it was so. Velo Hizkir Bazeh Hashem Yisbarach. Didn't mention God. Vitamo Asher Omar. Ki Huze, Ki Ein Hashem Yisbarach Mazkir Shmo Al Hara'ah. The answer is, I think the reason is because you're not going to mention Hashem's name on the withholding of dew when something bad happens. You have to pay such close attention to language. You know, that's what Chazal did. Tosfos notes something. We went through these psukim and we said, you know, do you see anything? And we looked pretty closely and we completely missed the fact that it's Vayichain and Vayas Elokim Kain. Tosfos doesn't miss anything. So that's the point that Tosfos makes is that Hashem will not associate his name with the whole thing of do. You can take this idea a step further and suggest that that with the second miracle, right? The first miracle was that the wool is wet and everything else is dry. The second time around, the wool is dry, and everything else is wet. I'm just trying to understand what I wrote in my notes here. Hang on. I actually didn't get rid of the rest of it. Oh, I see. I made my note on the wrong miracle. The first time round, what you could say is that God did not get rid of the rest of the dew. He just amplified the dew on the wool. If you look at the language in Pasuk Lamechet, right, it just says that he squeezed out the wool and there was a lot of water, right, that had been in it. God just amplified the dew on the wool. He didn't say the rest was dry. Whereas the second time, the full miracle is spelled out. And maybe that's why he wants a second miracle. Because the first one wasn't there. The first one wasn't exactly what he wanted. However, Barbanel gives you a different answer. But just let me make sure that I'm being clear, because I think I took a few steps in a row that connect the dots.
I felt very insecure that even the first one, the way it was.
Yeah.
If you asked for it and you had any belief in God, you would probably accept it.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, it happens to be that he is insecure in the relationship. That is here. But what I'm suggesting here is the following: he asks for a second miracle because the first one doesn't come out the way he wants it to, because God doesn't withhold. Do. As Tosfos notes here, God does not block do. So therefore, all that happens here is that God makes extra do on the wall. So the wall is really soaked. And Gideon looks at that and says, that's great, but that wasn't what I asked for. I asked for there to be water, you know, only on it, on the wall. And therefore, he says, now let's try it the other way around and let's see how that goes.
But you have to interpret that from the idea that God doesn't perform do.
Correct.
Because he asks here that if they all call out our sorrow, and it's a big pain. So you would think there was no, it was dry on the ground.
Correct. No, this is correct. This is something that I've seen. I didn't actually write where I saw this. It wasn't my own idea. But in my notes, I didn't say where I saw it. So I don't know. But the easier answer is a Barbanel's answer. Which is kind of an odd sentence. Usually that's not true. But take a look at Barbanel, number 6. He says, what's the deal with the second test? We know Barbanel's philosophy of why the first test. The message is supposed to be, the wool represents me. I want to know, Hashem, that you are with me and that you're not with anybody else. Well, take a look at number 6. Rabbi Yedaya HaPnini, who I don't know who he was, but he's somebody Barbanel quotes. Not frequently, just happens to be here. He said, Shachashash Gideon Shagiza L'Rifiona Yikabel Halechus Yoser Meha'aretz Shah. He says, look, you're dealing with wool. Wool absorbs. The ground doesn't absorb. V'lachein Ima'atatal Yislach L'Chagiza Me'od. So therefore, when the dew comes down, the wool will get really, really wet, and it will soak up the dew that was around it. And therefore, he asked for the second miracle, which would reverse it. So that's clear that it's not a natural event. And he says, going back to what this is a sign of, he says, water isn't always a good sign. There's also the water of the Sota, this bitter water. So all of them will be covered by this bitter, cursed water, like he says at the Yamsuf, at the sea, where the water piles up and the water covers them and so forth. He says that's the image that Gideon is going for. I want them to be covered with water that is water of punishment and I will be served by the I will be saved from that. And Abarbanel writes, I didn't bring you the full Abarbanel here, but he says, don't be bothered by water serving as a double metaphor. That happens all the time, as noted by the Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim, which is true. Meaning you can have the same object used to carry different messages, even in the course of the same story. So he uses water one way, and then he uses water the other way.
Does this scientifically work in Israel, in the sense that the amount of dew that they get in Israel is not like what we get here? It's a lot less. Plus, you have the sun, and it dries things up.
Which region are you talking about?
I'm talking about Israel in general. I mean, my kids are in Ariel. Right. But if you left a sponge out in the summer, it would never get wet. I mean, it would...
Well, he's not... First of all, he's not in the summer. He's in the spring. He's in Pesach time.
Okay.
That's... I mean, that... So that's... Right, that's number one. Number two, he's in the north. Right? If he's in Emek Israel... You know, he's not in a southern area. I don't know what the statistics are on the rainfall. I don't know. But the other thing is, whenever I read this story, my mind naturally jumps to like a piece of gauze on the floor of this wine press. But I really have no basis for saying that. Like, this could be like a big thing of wool, you know, like they cut off of the animal when they shear them. You know, I don't actually know what it is that he's using here, except that giza is a term that we use for just straight wool that you cut off the sheep. And maybe that's a factor here as well. The other piece of this, in general, is that the I believe this is outdoors. We discussed this back in the beginning when we talked about the Malach seeing him from under a tree when he is in this press. Like, if the press is underground, then how does the Malach see him from there? How is the Malach watching him from there? So that suggested this is exposed. But if you would have asked me in general, like, wine presses, I would have assumed are underground. Yeah. You know, that's what I would have thought. But it seems to be out in the open. I mean, you can have dew indoors. It's possible. But it just, and then it would shield it from the sun, maybe? I don't know. The whole thing is a little bit odd in that regard. But he gets his miracle. And yes, he is insecure. There is a need for perpetual encouragement. And even if one has already begun, you know, to follow this path that God is dictating, Tanakh is showing us the need for a human being to feel ongoing support from God. That's really what it comes down to, yeah.
Based on what you read from Parag Zion,
yes.
You already have the Midianim and Amalek's gathering in order to take care of Gideon. He's already called troops. He's sort of in, he's against the wall.
Yes.
So this is, I don't want to say irrelevant. He has to go to battle, or he's going to die.
No, he could run away.
Surrender,
run away, yeah.
Okay, but I mean, he's already called troops, so that's not his plan.
Yes, that's true. But number one, I think he called troops under the influence of this ruach, number one. And number two, I don't know to what extent due process is involved here, and you get to testify. But if Midian were to grab him at this point and say, you know, we think that you're a rebel, like his answer can be, what, because I broke an altar? You know, I mean, he hasn't started campaigning in the streets, let's go to war. I mean, maybe he has now if he's rallying everybody.
What's your point though? He's all primed to go anyhow. So why?
Yeah,
maybe he just loses his bottle. If you saw thousands of people standing there, you'd suddenly have a loss of resolve.
Yeah, maybe he's assessing risk. Maybe he ultimately is a warrior and he's really just, you know, maybe I would take more risk if Hashem would give me a sign, or a better sign, that I'm getting stronger support.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a different way of looking at it.
Right. Well, let's see what happens. Parag Zion. Now that he has received his second miracle, he goes on his second mission. Vayashkem Yerubal, hu Gidon, v'cholam asher ito. We are going to call him Yerubal. The remember, Yerubal is the fighter against the Baal, as opposed to the one who fears the Baal. He gets up in the morning early, like Abraham. And all the people with him, and they camped at Ein Charod. And Midian is up in the north. They give you a nice picture here, which I don't know if it adds anything to your understanding at all, but the Kinneret is up here. Ein Charod is over here, and they seem to be placing the Emek that Midian and crew are in north of him over here. So this is the location where things are getting set up. Okay, good. I feel educated now. So Vayomer Hashem El Gidon, God says to Gidon, listen, Rab Ha'am Asher Itach, you got too many soldiers. That's no good. You have too many soldiers for me to give them, you know, Midian. That's not happening. You know why? Because if they win, they're going to say, sure, because there were thousands and thousands of us. That's no good. So now, I want you to make the following pitch to the nation. Who is afraid and trembling? Yashov v'yitzpor mehar ha-Gilad. Let him get out of town. Let him flee from Har ha-Gilad. Yitzpor is a great word. I've seen a couple of different approaches to what v'yitzpor here means. Rashi, Radak, Ralbag, Mitzudat, David, take it from the word tzachra, which means mourning. And it's the idea of let them leave in the morning. That's what he's saying. So that they won't be seen by the enemy as they withdraw. That's one approach. Abarbanel says they should leave early in the morning to avoid the shame of leaving out of fear. On the other hand, Radak offers another approach, which Professor Elitzur here in the Dot Mikra also suggests, which is the word tzifira is a circuit. You find that term used in a basket in the Gemara, where they talk about baskets that are made by weaving reeds in a ring. So each ring is a tzifirah. So they should go sort of around the mountain. Okay. Yeah.
The yitzpor sounds like it's a verb.
Yes.
So how does...
So leaving in the morning is... Or leaving in a ring by going around is the verb.
That makes sense. But the other ones... are nouns, saying that it means morning or...
No, he's saying leave in the morning or leave by circumnavigating the mountain. Yeah. It is funny to me that no one takes this as being related to bird. Like, let them fly away. That I have not seen. But Malbim, you should know, has a completely different read of what they're doing. And it's going to matter later on in the story. Malbim says they're not leaving at all. Gidon is telling them to wait until morning, meaning wait until the morning after his victory. His victory is going to take place at night. And he's telling them to wait until morning, and that way when Midian is running away, they'll be able to attack the soldiers who are fleeing. So it's a completely different thing. He's saying to them, anyone who's afraid, you can be in the group that's going to attack the Midianites when they flee. Which I have to say makes him sound like a really confident general.
So they're the reserves.
Yeah. You don't want to? Okay, you stay behind. We have a job for you too. That's correct. So, Vayashav min ha'am esrim ushnayim elef v'aseres alafim nisharu. He loses 22,000, which is a big popular number in Tanakh. He loses 22,000, 10,000 remain. Still too many. Vayomer Hashem el Gidon. God says to Gidon. We're still going to come back to this. There are a few things I want to note still, but let's just read the psukim in general first. So Hashem says to Gidon, Od ha'am rav. You still have too many soldiers. Horeid osam el hamayim ve'etzifenu l'chasham. He says, take them down to the water, and I am going to refine them there. And the image of refining them is you're going to get rid of the dross. So I'm gonna cut this down further. V'haya asher omar elecha ze yelech itach, hu yelech itach. I'm gonna tell you who should be the ones to go with you, and those are the ones who go with you. And if I tell you someone's not going with you, he's not going. He takes him down to the water. And Hashem says to Gidon, anyone who licks with his tongue from the water, like a dog, put him on his own. And anybody who kneels to drink. So those who lick the water and those who kneel, put them on the side. Meaning, those are the ones I don't want. Only 300 pick up the water with their hands. And the rest of them kneeled. So Hashem says to Gidon, with the 300 who drew the water up with their hands to drink, that's who I'm going to use to save you. I'll give Midian into your hands. And the rest of them, let them go home. That's all you need is 300.
That's the famous Greek.
Yes, it is. Vayikhu es seida ha'am bi'adam. So they took the food of that whole group that's leaving, right? They took their supplies, they took their shofarot, but the people they sent to their tents. And the 300 men he kept, and Machane Midyan is below him, they're north, but they're below him, in, you know, topographically, in the valley. Okay, so this is very interesting. There's a lot here that's very interesting, but of course the principal thing, the eye-catching part, is the business with the kneeling and the lapping up the water. What is this? So, a few things. First of all, the first instruction is send away the ones who are scared. What does that remind us of?
In the Torah, where it says, before you go to battle.
Yeah. However, what kind of war is that describing?
What, Melchem HaRashut?
Yeah. That's only for Melchem HaRashut. That's only for an optional war. The discretionary war. This war doesn't sound like that. So take a look at source number 7. Abarbanel says, Omar Zeh lo seis tam la'am sheyashuvu. He said this, who's afraid, to give them an opportunity to withdraw. Sorry, he said this meaning there are too many of them, in order to give an excuse for them to be able to leave with dignity. So this way, they'll be able to say, yeah, I'm afraid. As the Pasuk says, if anyone is afraid, let him leave. And the idolaters would leave as well, because they'd be afraid due to their sins. The problem, as I said, is that that is only for Melchemet HaRashut, as seen in the Sifri in source number 8. Professor Eli Tzur notes this in the Da'at Mikra. He says, that's talking about a discretionary war, not an obligatory war. So it's not that you're sending them home because you have to send home the people who are afraid. It's because Hashem wants to actually send them home. Hashem wants people gone so that he can make a greater miracle with this military victory. That's the idea. Now, how many people backed out due to fear?
22,000.
That's a lot of people. Right? How many people would you have expected? You have a military force of 32,000. How many would you have expected to walk away due to fear?
5%.
Handful, 10%.
Yeah, this is 2/3 of your army that just walked away.
If you're not saying it's fear and you're saying Avodah Zarah, then it's not. It's surprising that it's the other way around. That you actually even have the 10,000 at stake.
Right, in other words, there's so much Avodah Zarah that you'd think that all of them would have left.
Yes.
Interesting. Well, it could be that all of them worshipped it, but enough of them said, we're not afraid as a result of this, or we're committed to God now, and therefore God will take care of us. Especially when we talk about the ones who lapped up the water, and so the question of whether some of them were in fact idolatrous. Well, that may, well, we'll see that. The Professor Elit Sur, part of his overall theory of how this war worked, which he's already, the other piece that we had was Malvin, that was not him. But he suggests that the group that he has here, this group of 32,000, is actually not the group that includes all the people Gidon has rallied. There are people Gidon has rallied who are still supposed to be coming from the south, and that they suffered a defeat at the hands of the allies of the from the north. They suffered defeat at the hands of that alliance of Midian, Amalek, and the rest. And therefore, because those troops who were supposed to come help out were defeated, that caused a panic among the forces who were with Gidon. And that's why they left. What he's basing it on is something we haven't seen yet. If you jump quickly to Perek Chet, Pasuk Yud Chet. Chapter 8, sentence 18. This is going to be after the war. Zebach and Salmuna are leaders of Midian, and Gidon captures them. And look what he says to them. Vayomer el Zebach vel Salmuna. He's going to say to Zebach and Salmuna, Efoha anashim asher haragtem bitavor. Where are the men you killed on Har Tavor? And they said, Kamocha kamohem. You know, they're just like you. Kitar ben Amalek. They look just like you, those people I killed. So Professor Elit Sur suggests that he's talking about the people who Gidon had rallied, and that Midian actually massacred them at Har Tavor. That's the way that he reads this story. We'll see, there are other ways to take that pasuk, but that's the way that that Professor Elit Sur reads it, and he says that's why so many people backed out, because they had already suffered a defeat. That's his suggestion. But then you get this second culling, right? After the first one, after the who's afraid, he's still getting rid of people. So, what's wrong exactly with kneeling and lapping up water? You could say that there's nothing wrong. It's completely random. Right? You could just say, this is just God's method of getting rid of numbers until there are 300 left. It could have just as well been a lottery.
Sounds like a where what Moshe tells them to, for those that do Avodah Zarah, so let's drink from the water.
But there's something wrong with the water. Here, everybody's drinking. Everybody's drinking this. So the Mefarshim go in three different directions. The first is Rashi, Radak, Mitzvah, David, Abarbanel, the bulk of the Mefarshim, really. If you take a look on your sheet, I brought it for you from Rashi in source number 9. And that is that kneeling was an act of Avodah Zarah. They kneel before their idols. That's why they fell into that position, because that was what they were used to. I only have one problem with this. We said already, according to several Mefarshim, and it fit the text, that Gidon was from a family of idol worshippers. His father was the lead idolater, and Gidon seems to have participated. So why are we suddenly sending home all the warriors who had idol worship in their past? Right? It seems a little bit strange. That's number one. Ralbag offers a very interesting other approach. He's very practical. Take a look at source number 10. He says, Hamalaki kim bi adam el pihem. Those who draw the water up with their hands, kizem oral charitzus ugvura. That shows energy and strength. The ulama asher karua birkehem lishtos heim adzelim. If they kneel, that shows they're lazy. They kneel down and they just, lap up the water like that. That shows they're lazy. Gidon wants the strong ones, says Ralbach. He's very practical in his approach. Of course, that doesn't fit the idea that we want a great miracle. Now you're saving the ones who are strongest. That kind of defeats the purpose. So Professor Elit Sur offers you a third approach, which I think is interesting, and that's why I brought you a number 11. He says, "V'yesh omrim." Some say, "Shnitztavel achzik ba'alalu shelo karua birkeihem la'osu l'siman ki ba haketz l'knia v'letvusam v'chiyasidem hem l'nitzelanatzeach." He says the point was keep the ones who don't kneel because kneeling is a sign of defeat. Those who are willing to kneel by the water, that image is not the image we want. We want soldiers who stand. We want soldiers who are upright. And so that's why those who kneel are sent home. That's the idea. So the message that emerges here, whichever way you read what the symbolism is that Hashem's goal here, well, first of all, the message seen in the fact that Hashem wants to make a great miracle, and the message seen if you take the view that he sends home the ones who had a history of worshipping Avodah Zarah, is that Hashem's goal is not simply to save the Jews from Midian. It's to save them from lack of faith in Hashem. He wants to rescue them from the Avodah Zarah as well, which also makes the miracles more important. Right? It's not only to inspire confidence so that you will revolt against Midian. It's to inspire confidence that you'll believe that Hashem is with you.
Can we back up one second?
Yeah.
With what you just added about Har Tabor and the fact that some of the people he rallied did not make it,
if you take that view,
then the signs make more sense. In other words, based on the order of what happens, he rallies the people, and then the people he rallied get massacred along the way. Now he wants to ask God again.
If he knew about it before he asked for the sign. It would be good if I had some hint in the text, though, that was what was going on.
Well, you skipped the chetz, telling us...
No, I know, but I'm saying it would be good if in between the point where he rallies people and the point where he asks for the sign, he finds out, these people got killed. God, what have you done? Give me a sign that you're with me.
Right.
You know, I would have liked to see... I hear what you're saying. I would have liked to have seen something like that to indicate that. It's such a major plot point. And my problem in general with Professor Elitzur's approach is that I think Iker Chasim and HaSefer, you're missing key elements here. But, all right, so that we'll leave off here then with Gideon having had his second miracle and having also had his second mission of paring down the population. We said that next week we do not meet, and the week after that we do not meet. So we resume on Tuesday, whatever that is, January 7th. But, once again, for anyone who doesn't yet have a flyer, for...